This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. My guest, Dimitri Martin, is a stand-up comic and a contributor to The Daily Show with Jon Stewart.
Young people, they're more than the future. They are our target demographic. But when we want to learn more about them, we turn to our own Dimitri Martin and trend spotting.
Trends. Martin started contributing to The Daily Show in 2005. In 2004, Entertainment Weekly named him one of the 25 funniest people in America. Earlier this year, he had a special on Comedy Central called Dimitri Martin Person. It just came out on DVD. We'll hear an excerpt a little later. Right now, let's hear him in action on The Daily Show. In his role as trend spotter, he did a report on life coaches, counselors who help you solve problems and help you get where you want to go in life. When Martin's report was over, he sat down with Jon Stewart.
Obviously, it's a fascinating trend, Dimitri. Is there a way for someone at home to know if they themselves need a coach?
Well, recently, I came up with one. Before that, there wasn't. Mm-hmm. But I took the time to create the Life of Satisfaction Expectation Ratio, mm-hmm. which is hard to say, but the acronym is easy. It's LOSER, LOSER. Currently, it's the only tool available to calculate one's need for a life coach. And it's easy. You can do it at home. You just take the age you were when you moved out of your parents' house, multiply by the age you lost your virginity, plus the square root of your monthly income divided by the number of cats you have, plus one.
And what number would you get that would indicate that you needed a coach or...
If you were a loser?
Yes.
Well, there's no answer per se, but if you bothered copying down the equation, you need one.
Dimitri Martin, welcome to Fresh Air. You have a new DVD of a one-man comedy show that you did on Comedy Central, and it's called Dimitri Martin Person.
Yeah.
And in your stand-up comedy, you do a lot of, like, observational one-liners. You know, one or two lines about something that you find, like, a little ridiculous or absurd. Then you move on to another observation. And these are about absurdities in life or in language. Why do you gravitate to that kind of humor as opposed to, like, the long story?
Well, when I was younger, a lot of my friends who were comedians, it seems that when they were young, when they were kids, they were comedy nerds. They had a lot of comedy albums and they knew a lot about comedy, say 2,000-year-old man or something like that. I don't know how much I was a comedy nerd. I think I was just a standard nerd. I think I was just a kind of straight up nerd. For me, my interests were more like brain teasers, which, you know, I don't know if this is the coolest thing to admit, but I liked, you know, those puzzle books and that kind of stuff and just taking a pen and, you know, trying to figure out some weird Mensa thing or something like that. So I was aware of comedy. I like comedy. I like joking around, all that kind of stuff as a kid. But I never thought of that as an endpoint or a place to spend my time. That seemed like just a side thing or a way to relate to people. My focus, aside from, say, breakdancing, was puzzles, trying to solve puzzles.
That's what all the hip-hop guys say, that in addition to breakdancing,
it's very similar.
They liked puzzles.
Yeah, my comedy is very similar to gangster rap. there's a lack of helping verbs. some awareness of jewelry, whether in public or private, and toughness. I mean, you got to be tough to be a comedian.
Let's hear an excerpt of your new DVD. And this is a DVD of your stand-up show that was on Comedy Central. So as we're about to hear, Dimitri Martin often performs comedy backing it up with a guitar or piano or a guitar and harmonica. You know, it's as if he was singing, but what he's really doing is stand-up. So let's hear part of that, like, instrumental with comedy part of his show.
Uh-oh. There's a store in my neighborhood called Futon World. I love that name, Futon World. It makes me think of a magical place that becomes less comfortable over time. Whenever I use my computer, I don't type LOL. I type LQTM, laugh quietly to myself. It's more honest. By the way, if you want to sound like a creep, just to add the word ladies to the end of things that you say. You sound like a creep. It could be harmless, too. Like, thanks for coming to my show, ladies. Help, I've fallen into a well and I'm trapped. Ladies. It's like a jacuzzi with really high walls. You know you want it. Went to this clothing store. The lady working there, she got mad at me. She said, what size are you? I said, actual. This ain't a trick, baby. She was amazing. I never met a woman like her before. She showed me to the dressing room. She said, if you need anything, I'm Jill. I was like, oh my God. I never met a woman before with a conditional identity. What if I don't need anything? Who are you? If you don't need anything, I'm Mike.
That's Dimitri Martin from his new DVD of his Comedy Central show. And Dimitri Martin is also a correspondent for The Daily Show. I really like that ladies bit. How did you realize that that anything you say is going to sound particularly smarmy if you end it with ladies?
Yeah, I don't know. I just know the tone of that word. It's just funny, just ladies. It just seems, that just popped to me. And it's funny because a lot of my jokes, I don't think I often come from hearing something and then it becomes a joke. It's usually just looking at an object and then it's just some turning it around in my head and I'm like, oh, there's the joke. But that one, it just, yeah, it just lent itself to that nice structure too of you could do endless examples and just by saying ladies, it just kind of gives you, it's a shortcut.
There's one on your CD where you wonder, what if you said sort of after every sentence, how that, after some things, that's okay, but after other things, it's really horrible. Can you give us some examples of that and tell us how you thought of it?
Yeah, that one, the original version of that joke was sort of is just a harmless thing to say. It's just a filler. And that must have been from a substitute teacher, somebody who'd always just say, it's sort of, you know, this, that, sort of, you know, if we could sort of. And I just thought, you don't need sort of, man. That's not doing anything in there. But then I thought, wait a minute, if it's at the end, you know, then it can mean everything. Like, you know, I love you, sort of. Yeah, that's different. Or you're going to live. Or it's a boy. That's where sort of, yeah, that's going to be more of an impact. And I also have that other joke about if you start a sentence with the word dude, I wondered what the most intelligent thing ever said was that started with the word dude. You know, and I think that joke was something like, you know, dude, these are isotopes. Or dude, you're going to live. Good news, we removed your kidney. You're going to be fine. I think the ending of that one was, dude, I am so stoked to accept this Nobel Prize. I want to thank all my homies.
So you really do work these out as puzzles. You kind of think of like, what would make this ridiculous?
I think so, yeah. Sometimes there's more intention and I'm working at it. I remember I tried to write a joke about revolving doors for like 2 years or something. Sometimes I see something and I go, I know that's funny. To me, there's something funny about revolving doors. I don't know what the words are for it, but it feels funny to me. And then I'll work on it and then eventually it might emerge as a joke. I have a list of things that just I am convinced are funny, but I haven't figured out how. And then of course other things, just an improv or it just floats into your head and it's funny immediately.
Do you have lists of things in your pockets now?
Yeah, I have like sometimes on a receipt there'll be a joke or I woke up the other day I was cleaning my apartment and I find little slips of paper that just have jokes on them that I wrote in the moment I was somewhere and I thought, oh, that's funny. And then I find them later and it's just like this weird, unfunny fairy is leaving me messages around the apartment or something. I found something in my room the other day I was cleaning and it said, a stalker is like a private investigator who no one has hired or something like that. It was like between my bed and like this bureau and I was cleaning and I found this piece of paper and it was like a weird message to myself. It was like an unwise, wise man leaving me notes. A failed fortune cookie writer is leaving things around my apartment.
So what did you do?
But it is funny.
Did you put it in the trash or put it in your act?
No, I have these folders. I have these weird manila folders that are just, you know, if I'm really blocked, I can just go dig through it and say, oh, you know what? That's not funny, but I think I know what I was trying to do. That could be funny. And mm-hmm. Then I go try it, you know, put it on my list and try it that night. And then it's not funny. I say, okay, yeah, it's not funny.
Now, you'd been a law student before becoming a comic. Yale Law School, was it?
No, I went to Yale for college, and then I went to NYU Law School for law school.
And it was toward the end of law school that you realized, oh, I don't want to do this. I think I'll try comedy.
Yeah, I dropped out. I did 2 years out of the three, and then I left because it's a better story.
Why did it take you that long to realize? And did you feel so invested already, both financially and just in terms of like your whole mental state and your time? Was it really hard after making that investment to say, mistake, I'm leaving?
The interesting thing was I had a full scholarship. I turned down a couple other schools because I got money at NYU. And at the time, my girlfriend at that time was going to medical school in New York. So then the chance was we could be together and I wouldn't have to pay for law school. So I went for it. When I got there like a month in, I realized, uh-oh, this is boring. I don't like this. I'm talking about 1 month in the first year, I kind of had that revelation. But I think I was so entrenched in my life plan and my idea, hey, I'm going to be a lawyer. I'm talking from like seventh grade. Just after breakdancing, I decided I was going to be a lawyer. Like it was in that spot in my timeline. I realized, oh, you know what? It was like a to-do list. Oh, yeah, career, corporate lawyer, sounds great. Done. Never worried about it again. Went straight, you know, high school, college, LSATs, got in there, got the scholarship. And then when I finally realized I don't like what I'm doing each day, I had no other plan or I guess like version of myself that wasn't a lawyer. So it took me that long. I was a White House intern after that first year because I thought, oh, maybe politics or government or something. But that wasn't for me either.
So when you realized that a legal career was going to be boring for you, that it, after all this planning, it wasn't right for you after all, what made you think you could be a comic?
Well, I remember doing some very specific soul searching and thinking, okay, I'm dreading each day when I go to school. Not because it's too hard or it's just no passion. I'm just not excited about what I'm doing. I just feel like, I think I'm too young to be feeling this way already. Something's wrong. So I just did like little thought experiments and I thought, okay, forget about money, status, or what anybody thinks about me. When I wake up in the morning, what activities would I look forward to doing? Do you know what I mean? Just what physically could I spend my time on that I get excited about? Second part of that, how do I get money for that? If I could figure out those two things, then I'm set because then I'll just do the activities that I like and then I have money so I could have a house and food and stuff, you know? And then I thought, well, what do I like doing? I like joking around with my friends. Okay, I guess comedian. And then that was the beginning of that. And I just thought, okay, I guess I can't be in law school anymore because then I can't do both. So I dropped out. Also, NYU Law School is adjacent to one comedy club and across the street basically from another.
Did you play there?
I was walking by comedy clubs every day.
Did you play those clubs?
My first set I ever did was across the street from the law school. The summer, I dropped out in the spring, and then that summer I got on stage for the first time.
What'd you do?
I did 12 jokes.
Tell us one or two of them.
Okay, I think I can remember some of these. This is 10 years ago. I started on Bastille Day of 97. Okay, 12 jokes my first night. My goal was to get a laugh, one real laugh on one of my jokes. That would be the sign, yes, you can be a comedian. By the way, I booked two nights in a row. Monday was my first night, and Tuesday was going to be in another room. Monday, I go up. 12 jokes. I had jokes like, one of them was, they were pretty complicated. I think one of them was this. I made a deodorant that smells like my friend Jim. It's called Jim. Sometimes I wear it and I hang out with his blind friend Jerry. Then Jerry thinks he's with Jim. Sometimes I wear my Jerry deodorant, then Jerry thinks he's alone. That's my first night.
Did that get a laugh?
I think that one got a laugh. Then I had a joke about, because this is a while ago, I had a joke about I don't prank call people anymore. That's too old school. What I do now is I prank people on their beepers. But then it's difficult because then they call me and I have to answer the phone in a threatening way. And it was this whole thing. It was really complicated. But I got laughs on six of the jokes. I got laughs on half the jokes. I wish I could remember more of them. I lost the tape. I taped it, but I don't know where those jokes are anymore. I think the first night I might have done the joke about I was riding an escalator and I tripped. I fell down the stairs for an hour and a half. That joke held. I did that in the first special. That was one of those that kind of lived on, you know? A couple were good enough. Most of them weren't. There was a joke about being bad at lying, but it wasn't that I was bad at telling the lies. I was bad at picking the topics that I lied about. So somebody'd say, you know, what time is it? 4:30. Okay. I mean, you know, I don't know why I have this cool interview with you here and I'm just doing the worst jokes I ever wrote. You guys could really make me look way less funny than it might be.
My guest is Dimitri Martin. His Comedy Central special has just come out on DVD. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Dimitri Martin. He's a contributor to The Daily Show. He's the trend spotter and youth correspondent. His Comedy Central special has just come out on DVD. Let's talk about your past a little bit. Your father was a Greek Orthodox priest.
Yeah.
So you went to church a lot?
I went to church a lot every Sunday, and I was an altar boy from very young until I went to college. I was actually head altar boy, and that might have been because my dad was the priest, but I think I had pretty good skills as well and probably earned it. But I was the top altar boy, I'd say, probably in my county.
What were your father's sermons like?
My father was funny. He was really funny. He loved Bill Cosby. He loved Saturday Night Live, Peter Sellers. Pink Panther was a big part of my childhood. We used to watch the Pink Panther movies. His sermons, in retrospect, I realize, they were like 20-minute sets. It was like him doing 20 minutes for an audience. Anecdotal, very personal, and just really funny. And it was never doctrinal. And he spoke extemporaneously. There were no notes. He didn't read his sermon or have this big prepared thing. He'd have a couple ideas jotted down on an envelope or something I'd see up there on the pulpit. And then he would just go. He would just kind of talk, and he would just find these jokes, you know?
Do you still go to church? Do you still practice?
I haven't been to church in a while. I'm not such a good Greek Orthodox churchgoer anymore. Maybe because a lot of times I'm traveling. I don't know. I guess I just kind of drifted. I don't know how much I've questioned my faith or any of that kind of stuff. I feel like I got busy. And fart jokes take a lot of time, you know? and working around the clock. But I liked growing up in the church. I think it was a good place. And my dad just had a really good style. He was just something about putting your heart out there. People just, if you can be authentic, I think it just goes a long way with people, whether it's in a church or on a stage or anywhere.
So do you think of yourself as a comic as trying to be authentic in the way that your father was as a priest?
I think it took me a long time to realize that, but yes, definitely. That's what I liked about his comedy as a person.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't very derisive. He wasn't, just not a lot of venom in him. There's a sweetness to the way he approached things. That's just who he was.
So your father was a priest, but your family also had a restaurant, a diner?
Yeah, we started with a Greek food stand called Shorty's Shish Kebab at the Jersey Shore because my grandfather is just about 5 feet or was just about 5 feet tall. And that was a seasonal business where we sold shish kebab and gyro at the boardwalk. We had that for a bunch of years. And then my parents took all their life savings and they got a diner. And so then we had a Greek diner that we still have with my uncles and, well, my uncle and my grandparents and stuff.
Was this by the shore?
The stand, Shorty's Shish Kebab, was on the boardwalk right next to the beach. And then the Sandcastle is the name of the diner, and that's like 6 miles from the beach.
Oh, so it must have been great as a kid to have, you know, a family-run food stall on the beach. What a great excuse to be on the beach a lot.
In theory, except they made me work there from age 11. I had to work at Shorty's in a windowless basement. I'm right next to the beach, and I'm in a basement with my grandfather. My job was to skewer shish kebab 50 cents an hour.
Wow.
They paid me 50 cents an hour. And I had to, you have to take the meat out of this like lemony, your hands get all, you know, corroded or whatever. And then I had to put meat on metal sticks for 50 cents an hour. And I was a bad worker. Every hour I asked for my 50 cents at the end of the hour and I'd go try to win a watch. You know, those things that like the thing turns around and you try to get a watch. So I would want immediate like gratification. I was like, I want my 50 cents to work for me.
So every hour you'd earn 50 cents the hard way and then lose it.
Yeah, I'd go run and try to win a watch.
So you'd never have any money at the end.
Yeah, I'd never have any money. But that, it was fun being at the boardwalk because I loved, that was the skateboarding, surfing, all that kind of stuff. And so I had my surfboard in the basement. I'm skewering shish kebab and my surfboard's right next to me. And I'm just thinking, oh, As soon as I'm done, I can go surf. I'm at the beach. So that was pretty cool. But then working at the diner, it's the same thing. Busboy against my will, waiter, host. But that's where the puzzle books came in. I used to just bring puzzle books to work and just walk around thinking about puzzles and stuff. And eventually that became jokes, I think.
And how many pieces of meat can fit on a skewer?
I think it was 5 with vegetables in between.
So one more thing. Since you're a former law student and almost lawyer, can you actually understand your own contracts?
Pretty much. 2/3 of them, because I only went to law school for 2 years.
Well, Dimitri Martin, thanks a lot for talking with us.
Thanks for having me.
Dimitri Martin is a contributor to The Daily Show. His Comedy Central special has just come out on DVD. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.